Everybody. Sorry about getting started here just a little late. We're having a ladies' class. Charles is our, Charles is our token. And hopefully the norm is, as we get going here, by the time we end, we'll have more people show up. Yeah, we're on lesson 26, which, by the way, is the last lesson in this series. So you all start thinking about where you'd like to go next. We're in a study of the chronological study of the life of Jesus by Gene Taylor. And we're in Matthew 28. We're in the last, I say last week, that's not even accurate. We are in the time period between the crucifixion and resurrection of Christ and his ultimate ascension. Did anybody else need a lesson? Marquisha always forgets hers at home. Okay? So that's the time frame we're talking about. We've talked about Christ rising from the dead, and who came to visit? The two Marys and Salome. A.K.A. Joanna. Okay? And I said visit. That's actually a misnomer. It wasn't so much that they came to visit as they came to wrap the body with spices and that type of thing, which is normal, was a normal procedure for the custom of burial at that day and time. So we had gotten down on lesson 26 to question 4. To whom did Jesus make his second appearance after the resurrection? There were two disciples. He traveled with them. And what I found interesting were their comments that they made back to him. Said, you've been in Jerusalem and you haven't heard what's going on about this man, Jesus? And I just found that very interesting. They didn't recognize him. And I sometimes try to put myself into that kind of a place or a position. And I'm thinking, okay, if I'm out on the golf course or I'm in Lowe's salivating over the new tools, okay, which I do on occasion, and somebody is walking by and happens to say something, and I catch it, and it's about religion, church, God, whatever. Would I look at them and say, you've lived in the United States for how many years and you don't know anything about Jesus? Come here and let's talk. I don't know that I could do that, to be honest. And I tend to be pretty brash and outgoing. So, but that's an interesting dynamic. Jackie was telling us that John's not feeling well, so she took an Uber to come in this morning. And I'm going to assume something based on what you said. She said that the driver talked about religion all the way in. Well, he must have based that upon your statement of saying, I'm going to church. Right? Okay. See what an opportunity that there is? You never know. Somebody hears that and goes, oh, okay. Well, now we jump right in. And it gives us an opportunity. And if you do it in the right way, it doesn't have to be offensive. So just food for thought. But that's kind of what struck my mind. Were there any questions or comments? Go ahead, Ethelyn.
Maybe it was
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, it says they were prevented. What does that mean? My assumption is, yeah, it wasn't, they weren't ready to recognize him. And so there was something stopping them. I would agree. I don't know. Be pure speculation, but I really don't know. Okay. How many of you join us on our Saturday morning class? Allow me to introduce Brother Gary Gibson from San Diego and his wife, Pam. Thank you. It's great to see you guys. You got a lesson sheet. We're in Matthew chapter, what are we in? Matthew 28. And we'll be looking at possibly some of the other. It's a kind of a chronological study, a synoptic type study. Go ahead, Karen.
I just see this as such. This has always been one of my favorite passages because I see it as such a gentle story. They were marveling. They were talking about the things that had happened. And by Jesus, it brings tears to my eyes. It is so beautiful. Because in those days, it was probably a quiet road. It was, countryside, whatever. If people weren't on their phones looking at their texts and all, they were walking and talking about Jesus. And he joined them on that road. Just beautiful.
There's something else that we see in this discussion. The two disciples, what were they feeling?
They were amazed.
Amazement.
I think maybe kind of disappointed that what they thought would happen really didn't. That,
okay. Yeah.
Israel was going to be on top
again. Okay. Anyone else? Whatever the motivation was, it wasn't just at the front of their minds. It was on the tips of their tongues, and they were talking about it. When we think about the word, the gospel being spread throughout the world, this is how it happened. People were talking about it. Even people that don't want to hear you talk about it will allow you to talk about it if you're excited enough. I can't tell you how many times people will sit and listen to me tell a golf story for no reason other than I'm excited about it. And it's just polite to listen. So when I start telling my stories, you all remember that. Okay? I called my grandson, the oldest one, the other day. He picked up the phone. I went, I'm building duck calls. And I'm blowing a duck call in the phone. Well, he could care less. He's got professionally made duck calls that are good. But he gave me my due and listened to me because he's a polite young man. And he knew I'd cut him out of the wool if he didn't. Yeah, boy, there goes that nickel. Okay. But people will listen. These people were excited about what had gone on.
It was an interesting thing, though. Karen's description of it was quite interesting to me. And we talked about talking to other people. But in verse 25, he calls them foolish and slow of heart. It's not exactly a joining approach.
Yeah, well, the context of that statement, though, is what? Yeah, and wasn't it also their failure to recognize him?
Well, but then that we get back into were they prevented? So if they're prevented, how can you call them foolish?
Yeah. So it's just a fascinating dynamic of what we're seeing. Yes. Yeah, and we're in Luke 24 is where this discussion is coming from. And in verse 24 beginning, these are the two disciples that are talking. Some of those who were with us went to the tomb and found it just exactly as the women also had said. But him, Christ, they did not see. And that's when Christ responds and says, "You foolish men. Slow of heart to believe in all that the prophets have spoken." So it's almost as if what they said about the women going and not seeing Christ, that's what he's responding to when he says, "Oh, foolish men."
Karen's point is valid. You don't know the tone. I agree with that. It's
yeah.
Hard to know based on the context. My larger thought, which I never did quite get across clearly, was he didn't hesitate to gently confront. I'm a conflict avoider. I'll tell you that right now.
I understand.
But Jesus didn't duck out of his responsibility.
No.
He's willing to gently, by character, at least confront with their mistake.
So by their comment in verse 24, you can see them saying, "Well, but he wasn't there. He wasn't in the tomb." And yet, throughout the Old Testament, we see, if not necessarily he's going to be put in a grave and raised from the dead, we see that. Which was it that the prophet that Peter quoted? Was it the prophet Joel that said, "You will not leave my Holy One"? No, that was David. "You will not leave him to see destruction"? Okay? That was in Peter's sermon in Acts 2. Well, they had been told the Messiah wasn't going to stay in the grave. They just didn't grasp what was being said. Probably not. Yeah, no. But if you had all this abundance of evidence on the front end, and then you do go to the graveyard and you see that it's empty, you don't really act too surprised. You go, "Oh, that's what all of that meant."
It's easy to deny what we. It's hard. I guess I'm feeling compassion for these people. This must have been a hard. This real people, real life, real things, and everything they saw goes against anything that's particularly been known.
Exactly it.
It's a tough situation.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? Well, now it's time to start class. Brady, could you lead us in a prayer, please? Amen. Thank you very much. Okay, so that brings us down to Matthew chapter 28. So let's all flip over there. Verses 11 through 15. And when somebody gets there, if they could please read Matthew 28, verses 11 through 15. Okay. Don't you just love the intrigue of politics with lying and bribery? And what happened with the soldiers at the tomb? Why? Yeah. Their instructions were stay awake. Penalty of death if you don't. The angel showed up, caused them to fall asleep. They slept through the earthquake. Remember the earthquake that when the rock, they slept through the earthquake. And we're not talking about waking up in Fresno and you kind of felt like maybe a little motion sickness from the bed kind of doing this. And you look up and the chandelier's gently doing. I've been in this building when that's happened, and all the little lights kind of gently rocked back and forth. Okay? That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about an earthquake that took a big boulder and rolled it away. And they slept through it. The noise. The angel had caused them to fall asleep. They're under penalty of death. They're panicked. So the... was it the chief priests, the elders? They all counsel together and they come up with a lot of money and they give it to the soldiers and they say, okay, here's what you're going to say. You're going to admit to falling asleep and that it was at that time when his disciples came and stole the body. Wow. Go ahead. Good point. If they were asleep, how did they know who took the body? Right? It could have been leprechauns. But them admitting to falling asleep was tantamount to suicide. That's saying, yeah, I did it. Kill me. Well, what do the elders and the council tell these soldiers that they're going to do for them? Yeah, yeah. Don't rock the boat, okay? We don't want it known what happened. Don't rock the boat. Leave it alone. In a discussion about 3 or 4 weeks ago, the soldiers had come up, and I knew that we were going to be having this particular discussion, so I kind of put it off at that point in time. Here it is. This is where we're at. Was that a hand? That's the problem with lying and liars, that you build up so many lies, you eventually forget what the first lie was. So when that question comes up again, you're going, oh, what did I say? Jackie and then Eric. Ah, yeah, can't answer that. But yeah, they got you. Yeah. They transferred them to, but yeah, you would have, and maybe the Romans, for all we know, did take one or two and make an example of them. I don't know. But what we're told is the soldiers were given money to lie and that the elders and council would smooth it over. Eric.
To carry the both are bad, there's very little hope for the people. And it seems to me in this opening of Scripture that God reveals to us the, God reveals to us the corruption of man's heart and the steps that he will go to take care of his protecting his own, put it that way. And I think we see that in religion today, the steps, all the hoops that you have to jump through, and then all the potential holes in the hoops that you have to jump through to make it happen. So it just keeps perpetuating itself and perpetuating itself. And that's the danger with religion and politics. It's just not a good mix.
You know, Eric makes a point that we'll expand on, if I may, just fractionally. You've all seen the card trick here. Pick a card, any card, and you pick one and you put it back in and they have to try to find the card. Pick a religion, any religion other than the church that Christ established. And start going back in history. Ultimately, you get to the point to where there is the original lie. They all start at some point with an original lie. Others who come in then support that lie, and it gets to the point, and I forget who it was that said it, but if you stand on the rooftop and yell a lie long enough and loud enough, eventually people are going to believe it. Who said that? There you go. And that's what we see. You go, pick the religion, pick Catholic, Catholicism. Go all the way back. Established around 300 or 400 A.D., somewhere in that range. And what was it that they said? What was the big lie? They're still promoting it today. The Pope has direct access to God. Holy See, okay? There's your lie. And people around him at that point in time knew that was a lie. Mormonism. Joseph Smith says, hey, I found this, and I used the Urim and the Thummim, the two stones, to interpret it or to translate it. Here's what it says. There's the big lie. Other people knew about the lie. But eventually it gets to the point now where people believe what they're saying. Every religion's the same way. You want to make money? You want to get rich? Give more. Prosperity gospel. How many thousands believe that? I mean, just in Joel Osteen's congregation alone, it's like 20 or 30,000 members. The big lie. And maybe that's why churches of Christ tend to be smaller in number. Because it's not based on a big lie. It's based on absolute truth. And people have difficulty dealing with truth. People want to believe the big lie. Why? Makes them feel good.
It gives them a false hope that they don't realize it's false. It feels like, okay, I've got something now.
Yeah.
That I've got something, not realizing that it's a lie and it's not true, but this is something that they feel that they have, that they now have.
Something to hang on to. Eric, I missed you earlier, and my apologies. Oh, no.
But the fact of the matter is that when one attacks the other, one will exert control over the other. I mean, we see that. You know, if religion is against what the government's doing, the government will attack religion. And it could go both ways. But I read a book on why people believe lies. And you boil
insert one term. It's easier to believe a lie than to practice the truth. Karen and then Karen.
And if I could just empty.
Go ahead.
To prove that theory, what all Satan had to say to Eve was, oh, that's not true.
Yep.
And, okay, I'll take your word for it.
Yeah. Karen. And the truth shall set you free. Karen. Okay, anyone else?
Wait,
Sheila. Among others. It is. Sheila? Yeah, the lie gives me what I want. Yeah, Jackie? You're right. But it's sad. You're right. Eric.
And again, in this opening, the Holy Spirit reveals to us that the best lie has a little bit of truth mixed in it, because these elders tell them, who is it that stole the body? Who is it that would have an interest in the body is the bigger question, and it would be the disciples. So I just think that
that one.
Karen and I are in sync this morning. So, yeah. It just seems to me that the lies that I have fallen for have that little bit of truth mixed in it and made me question and go, okay. And the bad thing is you sign a contract.
Yes, you do. Oops. So now, go ahead, Brady. Yeah.
Because it's to counteract the lie.
Proof is in the appearance.
Right. The problem, of course, being there's going to be a certain number of people who don't know it and go away and spread it.
Well, you know, I always pictured the Romans as thinking that it was kind of like the thing with, what was it, the weekend with Bernie or something like that, where Bernie was dead and they were trucking him around and people were thinking he was alive and... Now, I want you all to, for a moment, put your teacher's cap on. And we've been talking about a principle. Lies in the world and how it draws people away. If you were a teacher, what question would you ask now concerning the principle of how easy it is to believe a lie? I know, I want you to think. If you're the teacher, what question would you ask concerning the principle, how easy is it to believe a lie?
Well, I might ask two questions. One is, what lie is it you've been believing and wanting to believe? And the second one is, what standard do you use to check out whether it's a lie or whether it's the truth?
There's the Question. What lie have I been believing about God's word? And we all do. We don't think of it as a lie, but in terms of being scripturally accurate, it's not. So in effect, it's not the truth, which by definition is a lie. Can you think of one? God doesn't care if you use musical instruments. David used a harp and a lyre, L-Y-R-E. Okay? Baptism's not essential. We're talking about the biggies. But there's a lot of subtle ones. Yeah, let me open up the can of worms. We talked about it in our class yesterday morning. What was it that we were talking about yesterday morning that people just cling to, that's the way it's got to be, but that's not what the scriptures teach? People believe in traditions. If you're not able to make it to services, you have to put your contribution in an envelope and mail it. Really? Where does it say that? It doesn't.
Same place that says we have to have an invitation song.
Well, you're right. Though I see a lot more reason behind the invitation song. No, and you're right. We practice an awful lot of tradition. Change the tradition and watch people raise their swords high. Go ahead.
I just had a conversation with one of the gals at work. We were talking, and she said, "Oh, I gave up sweets for Lent." And I said, "Oh, okay." And I said, "So where do you get that from?" And she goes, "Well, what do you mean?" And I said, "Scripturally, where did that come from?" And she goes, "Well, it's tradition." That was her comment. It didn't have anything to do with it.
No. And it doesn't. It comes from the Catholics.
It comes as far down to the scroll as what time we meet. And whether we meet twice a week or three times a week, and whether we have evening services or we have group meetings, it's all just love. It's
yeah.
Not the word.
I'm getting... Go ahead, Iris. Yes, you're right.
They want to live peaceably the best they can, and whether it's extended family, general public, what's coming across the news, they're all fighting about what's right and wrong to begin with.
And then what we run into is people will take commandment and say, no, that's just tradition. Hebrews 10:25. Don't forsake the assembly. No, God doesn't command us to assemble. That's just tradition. Or, I assembled on Sunday morning. That has fulfilled my quota for the week, so I don't have to be there Sunday evening or Wednesday evening. Or, and by the way, I get this is a paid public announcement. Clovis's meeting starts today, and we'll go Monday night, Tuesday night, and Wednesday night. Of course, Wednesday we would hope to see you here, but if you have opportunity for Monday and Tuesday, it's a gentleman he's one of the professors at Florida College, and is going to be talking about faithful sayings from Timothy and Titus, if I remember the topic. And then beginning next Friday evening at 7 o'clock, our meeting with Danny Matchniff starts here. We'll have two gatherings on Saturday, one at 10 and one at 11, and then three services on Sunday. Our normal Bible class, Danny will speak, and then our normal worship service, and then Sunday evening. So we've got a week of revival, if you're interested. driving in this morning, I got to listen to Porter Wagner and Dolly Parton singing, "Daddy Was an Old-Time Preacher Man." And one of the verses of that talks about him coming in and holding a tent meeting. Most of you, yeah, I think most everybody in here is old enough to at least know what a tent meeting is. And if you never had the opportunity to go to one, you missed out on something really exciting. But we've got a week of it, so we have that opportunity. The priests, and this discussion all came about because we talked about the big lie that the priests had told the soldiers, "No, you lie. Here's the money. We're going to bribe you for it, but you lie, and we got your back on this." Kind of makes me wonder, here you've got these deceitful lying elders and council and high priests, and you're going to put your trust in them to have your back. You're okay, Eric. Well, and it does say that the elders called them in.
Right, but they hadn't gone to their authorities because they said, "Hey, if something happens, we got your back."
Yeah.
Why wouldn't the chief priests and elders do this? I mean, they've already murdered. Yeah. What difference does it make at this time? I mean, if you're willing to murder them, bribery's not a big deal.
Exactly. Charles? That would be my guess.
What happened when they brought Jesus to the governor, right? They didn't have enough money to just get him to do whatever they wanted right away.
So, yeah, my guess is they'd bribe him too.
Eventually formed a mob.
Anyone else? Yeah, let's just think for a moment about the character of the people that we are reading about. These people are pretty much scum of the earth. Brady pointed out they lie, or they murder. They lie. They bribe. They bring false witness. These people have no scruples. We're not dealing with good forthright people that made a mistake. We're dealing with people that live a life of lies.
Whatever it takes to keep their positions,
yeah,
to keep their mission, no matter what it takes, this is what they will do. And you see it today still. So nothing's really changed, but for us to recognize the evil in it and stay away from that at every opportunity is a good lesson.
Yeah, this is Gil's political statement for the year. We're talking about every politician that's out there. Eric made a point earlier that it's hard for a child of God to be a politician. And I don't think a child of God can be a politician. But here's the difference in what I'm saying. I do think a child of God can be an elected official. They can't be a politician. Do you see the difference? I'm drawing a line there. My experience with children, with Christians, Church of Christ, who have been elected to a position, get voted out rather quickly because they don't fit the pattern. unfortunate.
So I was going to say, all the things that you lay at the feet of these chief priests being scum of the earth, or because they murdered, they lied, they cheated, they steal, could be laid at the feet of King David. With one exception, King David remembered God, and he chose not to.
Yeah. He repented. Anything else? Okay, we've kind of pounded on that point a little bit here. That's okay. Flip over to Mark chapter 16. If somebody could please read verses 12 and 13. Okay. If somebody could find 1 Corinthians 15:5.
And that he appeared to Cephas and then to the 12.
Okay. And is that where it also says, and after that he appeared to me?
500. Yeah,
500. Yeah. Okay. So these are the numbers that Brady brought up earlier that Christ, after his resurrection, appeared to. He was in his physical body. Still had the holes in the hands from where they had driven the nails in. Still had the hole in his side from where they had pierced him with a spear. Recall that in his appearance to the disciples, that doubting Thomas, and what was it that Christ told him to do? He said, touch my hands, fill the holes. Touch my side, put your hand in it. This is the physical body that was brought up out of the grave. Okay? Charles? Yeah, I don't, when it says different form, and would it really doesn't matter one way or the other. I don't think that this means that it changed what it looked like. I think it's talking more about what Etheline was saying, that whatever form he was in, they were prevented from recognizing. Whether that, you know, maybe he appeared to them looking like somebody else. I don't know. Exactly. Yeah. Maybe he appeared with a beard. I don't know. So it's his body that came up out of the grave. It's his body that his spirit, soul was reunited with. And that's what walked the earth for, what was it, 40 days? Okay, after the resurrection, until he ascended, at which point the physical had to be changed to the immortal. Because the physical is mortal. The immortal, and Paul's very clear, God through Paul's very clear, the mortal cannot be a part of that which is eternal or immortal. So our bodies, this cannot go to heaven. Just can't. Yeah. It's got to be changed in some way, shape, or form. All right. We'll pick up then with, we're going to talk about questions 6 and 7 more. Next week is where we'll start. Thank you all for your discussion and attendance. Appreciate it very much.